So when we get into that mid-primary school age, we really do need to be thinking very hard about social media and what our children are exposed to. We need to know the risks. We need to know what's out there, and we need to be on that with our child. And I would say to any parent or teacher, you know, if you're using a social media account, a child should never be on there in isolation. An adult needs to be on there with them.
Welcome to the School Behaviour Secrets podcast. I'm your host, Simon Currigan. My co-host is Emma Shackleton, and we're obsessed with helping teachers, school leaders, parents, and of course students when classroom behaviour gets in the way of success. We're going to share the tried and tested secrets to classroom management, behavioural special needs, whole school strategy, and more, all with the aim of helping your students reach their true potential. Plus, we'll be letting you eavesdrop on our conversations with thought leaders from around the world, so you'll get to hear the latest evidence-based strategies before anyone else. This is the School Behaviour Secrets podcast. Hi there, I'm Simon Currigan, and welcome to the latest episode of School Behaviour Secrets. Whereas other educational podcasts dissect important issues with the delicacy of an expert surgeon, this podcast is more like an 18th century barber who turns up to treat your ailments with a jar of leeches, a saw, a bucket, and a stick to bite down on, and boy, are you going to need that stick. I'm joined today by my co-host, Emma Shackleton. Hi, Emma.
Hi, Simon.
Emma, I'd like to start by asking you a question. According to research carried out in 2020, what percentage of teenagers said they regularly used Instagram?
I'm guessing this would be a really high percentage. Going off the teenagers that I know, I'd say maybe 85%. Even as many as 90%. Go on then, enlighten me. What's the actual percentage of teenagers that regularly use Instagram?
I believe Instagram is the social media equivalent of crack cocaine. So according to this research by the National Center for Health Research, right, a whopping 72% said they used Instagram regularly. But it wasn't the highest social media site, which was YouTube, which lots of people forget is a social media site at 85%, which I guess is perhaps less surprising that it's at the top because people use it for videos all the time. And here's a really scary statistic. According to an Ofcom report this year, over half of 12 to 15-year-olds have received a negative experience over social media, with the most common being contacted by a stranger.
That's a bit creepy.
Yeah, I know. Which all illustrates really why this is such an important topic. And I know it causes a lot of issues in school, which is why our interview today is with Claire Orange, who's an author and expert around the subject of how social media affects our children's development. And in today's interview, she gives us lots of ideas and strategies for helping our kids use social media more safely.
I know that this is an issue that lots of schools are wrestling with right now. If you know a colleague or friend who you think would benefit from hearing this interview, do them a massive favour. Use the share button in your podcast app to send them a direct link to this episode. That means that they can hear these ideas and strategies because it might make a real difference to their pupils' safety on the internet. And now, here's Simon's interview with Claire Orange.
Today, I'm excited to have Claire Orange on the podcast. She is a multi-qualified child and adolescent therapist. She's published 16 award-winning books on social and emotional learning and has worked in many settings for 28 years. Claire is a passionate advocate for children being able to experience a happy, safe, and protected childhood full of opportunities to build their life resilient skills, and has recently launched an educational children's social media platform. Claire, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Simon.
So can you tell us about how you got into helping kids navigate social media safely? What made this stand out for you as an important issue?
You know, those 28 years of working with children have really seen an awful lot of change in a very short period of time. So I would say the last 5 years for me as a therapist working with families and schools, helping children with their mental health and well-being, has seen an enormous shift in what's happening for children and how early it's happening in life. So we're seeing a really big change globally of children experiencing anxiety, feeling like they don't belong, all of the factors that we know impinge on children's mental health and well-being. And we're seeing earlier and earlier presentations of this. And this is universal. It doesn't matter what country you're in. And the commonality in all of that is the access to digital life, that actually while brains do adapt over time, they can't adapt fast enough to cope with technology. And we're seeing young developing brains really taking the strain and showing us in behaviours related to mental health.
What is it about social media in particular, do you think, that's causing these difficulties?
It's an interesting question. I think what we've built is environments that adults can live and flourish in. Adults can know that online and offline are two very different places with two very different behaviours. They have a greater brain capacity to be able to put that device down, move away from it and re-engage with offline life. Whereas children engaging with social media, it's very busy, it's always on, there's no need to wait for anything, there's immediate gratification, you know, all the stuff that just plays into childhood. So what we've done is we've created an adult environment. We've dropped children in there who don't have the same level of self-control and self-regulation, and they've just gobbled it up. And in fact, they've just run away from us, in terms of use.
And we wouldn't do that in any other aspect of our lives. You know, what we would expose children to in terms of the adult realm, we'd be very, very careful about how we did it, or just say absolutely no to certain aspects of adult life.
Absolutely. And there's restrictions and prohibitions around that. You know, you can't go into a store to buy alcohol without showing your ID, but you can put yourself down on Pornhub without showing ID. You just have to say what age you might be to allow you access. And it's opened and exposed our children to a world well beyond their ability to cope.
So what common problems do you see families and schools struggling with when they're trying to teach their kids to be safe on social media?
Across the board, what we see schools struggling with and families struggling with is that highly addictive nature of social media. So including in that, Simon, I'm including gaming in that world. So gaming is a media that is social for children. It's often excluded. We think about Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, but you know, gaming is very social for children as well. It's highly addictive and it's very well programmed by very clever people to ensure that at the moment where you normally leave that environment, that a loot bag is dropped or some small trinket that keeps you engaged. Now, that's great for our children. So schools and families are really struggling because young people love being in this world. Adults love being in this world too. And when they come off, there's a bit of a behavioral fallout for most children. They're coming off a very high dopamine level in the brain and they're coming back into normal world, which, you know, emptying the dishwasher is not wildly exciting for most children.
As teachers, what are the key strategies and protective behaviours you think we should be equipping our kids with to safely use social media?
Well, these really fit well within the parameters of what we know works with children's mental health. So protective behaviours is very aligned to mental health in the early years of childhood. And that's managing self, managing others, making responsible decisions and showing empathy. So those are the really foundation pillars for growing out brain health of the child. So the protective behaviours around that, the ones that we commonly talk about, like consent. So a child consenting to have their image online, to sharing another child's image, to the contact that they receive, should I or shouldn't I friend this person who looks like they really like me? You know, those are the key things that we need to be addressing with our children who are in this massively overexposed world on social media, and them knowing how to protect themselves online from all of the lovely, shiny stuff that's put there specifically to draw them in like little moths to the flame. When we wrap our protective behaviours, children know how to manage themselves. They know how to manage others. They can pause before they post and make a responsible decision. And they know how to be a great citizen by showing empathy for others, which is often absent online.
You bring up an interesting point there, because in terms of empathy, if you say something unpleasant to someone face to face, you get to see their reaction and you feel that inside yourself and you kind of see the damage that you've done. But if you're trolling someone on social media, you don't really see the impact of your actions. And that's going to impact on how our kids learn about saying unkind things to other people and the effect that's going to have.
It's so very true. You know, you think right from the moment that we all hold our precious little babies, we share eye contact with them. We have an animated face. You know, when they're sad, we have a sad face, and they're learning to read human emotion off this big dial that we've got, you know, that we put forward to our child. And they can see our body, they can hear our tone of voice. So right from the very earliest moments, and in human brains, it's called serve and return. So I put something out and your brain captures that and then learns how to respond to it. And that's that serve and return. It's a really amazing part of human neurology that lights up. And yet there's none of it in the online world. And in fact, what we're modeling, and I'll use that global we to children online, when you see adults behaving exceptionally poorly. So you just need to look at any COVID-based discussion at the moment to see everyone come out and flay everyone else. Regardless of your opinion or point of view, you've got to bring someone down, you've got to shame them, you've got to be highly judgmental. And it kind of becomes a bit of a crown of achievement. And that's what we're exposing our children to. But actually, their brains aren't wired for that. That's not how human brains learn.
No, we're not learning about human relationships, are we? And you made a really interesting point as well about consent. And we've got to ask questions about whether children can meaningfully give consent, because do they understand what might happen to their photos? Do they understand what might happen to their comments and the things that they're sharing online? Do they have the life experience to be able to give informed consent in terms of social media and what happens next?
I think, like anything developmentally, there's always a really long run-up to that level, which is quite a cognitively driven consent. I've got to think about it. I've got to think, do I or don't I want my image? What will happen if that gets shared? So there's a lot that you have to think about and have this ability to do the consequential thinking. That's a long developing skill. But what we do know is that you can train consent from early by when you say to your child, would you like to give Auntie Mavis a cuddle? And your child says no, is that you don't then shove your child into the arms of Auntie Mavis, who loves your child, but your child has said no. And when we honour that in a child and we say, well, if you don't feel like it today, maybe you can just give Auntie Mavis a big smile, then we start to teach consent. So consent is a continuum. It starts early in actions, and it also starts with parents and teachers, what we are modelling. You know, the average child, Simon, has 5,000 images of themselves posted online by their fifth birthday. No one has thought to give that child or ask that child for their consent, neither parent nor teacher. And those images then become the property of the social media platform. So I believe as parents, consent really starts by deciding how much you're going to post of your child's tantrum online and being very honourable and respectful about that, because then we teach consent that later our children actually have a template for, they've got a foundation for. But if we don't do that in their early childhood, we can't then teach it when they're 12.
And of course, another aspect to this is, if you or I were younger, before social media, before the internet, if we had a bad day or if someone was picking on us or bullying us, when we got home, we could get away from that and shut the door and escape from it. But it's 24/7. It's hard to escape from a phone that's ping, 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 ping.
It is. And, you know, I think across the world, that's what we look at in terms of campaigning, is how always on the world of social media is for our children, and how we are all, it's a bit like Pavlov's dogs. If anyone's heard about Pavlov's dogs, you know, you ring the bell and the dog starts to salivate, because before you'd pair ringing the bell with putting the food down. Now you can just ring the bell and the dog thinks there's food and starts to salivate. So we can train behavior. Even as adults, we're all Pavlov's dog. We see that email notification pop up. And even in a meeting, you want to have a little look, because, you know, you've been well trained to look at that notification. And our children, all the bings and the beeps, if they don't do it, then they get that FOMO, that fear of missing out. Like, oh no, you know, the group chat will go on and I won't know what the in joke was, and maybe they'll talk about me and I won't know what the secret is, and they won't share that picture and all of that stuff. So our children are very well trained to respond to all the beeps and bings, which means that brains that are young and developing, that need rest and they need relaxation time, they need time to think before they say, which you and I got. We'd go home and go, I hate Mary. She's the worst person in the world. But by tomorrow, you kind of got over it a bit and you didn't say all the mean things you'd planned to say to Mary on the bus. You know, our kids now just spew them out in a very unprocessed way, and that just causes the online space to be a very fraught emotional space for children.
I'd just like to take a pause for a moment and say that if you're finding this podcast useful, then you're going to love what we've got waiting for you in our Inner Circle program. The Inner Circle is your one-stop shop for all things behavior. It's a comprehensive platform filled with videos, resources, and behavior inspiration to get you unstuck with classroom behavior. We've got training resources on de-escalation, supporting kids with anxiety, support strategies for conditions like autism, ADHD, and PDA, practical ways of helping pupils deal with strong emotions, assertive behavior management techniques for managing the whole class, setting out your classroom environment for success, resetting behavior with tricky classes, and more. Our online videos walk you through practical solutions step by step. And just like Netflix, you can turn an Inner Circle subscription on or off whenever you need to with no minimum contract. Plus, you can now get your first 7 days of Inner Circle for just £1. Get the behaviour answers you've been looking for today with Inner Circle. Visit beaconschoolsupport.co.uk and click on the Inner Circle picture near the top of the homepage for more information. The social media sites do have minimum age limits, which, you know, I suspect are largely ignored. So at what age should we start in terms of training our kids to formally use Facebook, Instagram sites?
Well, they do have the age limits and they're very loose. 80% of 12-year-olds already have two or more social media accounts. So that horse has definitely bolted from the stable, being that most of the social media is a 13-plus recommendation, which is not really about protecting our children. It's about making sure our children are old enough to put advertising materials in front of legally. So it's not about protecting our kids. It's about them making money. So when we're talking about what age, we already know that a lot of children have their own social media at quite a young age. So utilizing that very early in childhood, mostly it's used for entertainment. Children are watching other children unwrapping gifts. What is up with that? They're watching endless cat videos. They're sharing stuff with friends that's funny and entertaining. That does shift at about 8 developmentally. Children get into much more social-based interactions and there's a lot of social currency and status. So when we get into that mid-primary school age, we really do need to be thinking very hard about social media and what our children are exposed to. We need to know the risks. We need to know what's out there and we need to be on that with our child. And I would say to any parent or teacher, you know, if you're using a social media account, a child should never be on there in isolation. An adult needs to be on there with them.
The time to get a map is before you head into the woods, I believe is the saying.
Indeed.
What do you believe is the best way of engaging children in those kinds of activities so they go on to use those skills independently?
In the very early days of children being on a data-enabled device, I would say that protection comes around being on there with your child. And then from there moving out, it does need to be experiential. So I'm pretty sure that no one has ever learned to drive a car by being given the worksheet and you tick all the boxes about which side of the road you're going to drive on, how you're going to hold your hands, and you go, right, nailed it. Now I will drive a vehicle. We don't do that. We need to do more experiential-based training of children in a highly experiential environment. So from when children are on or showing interest in social media, which is usually in that mid-primary age, that's where we need to be doing lots of experiential-based learning, either by showing them our own social media, pointing out poor empathy, bad decision-making, trolling, grooming, cyberbullying, the stuff that you and I would see every day online. So we can give them the experience with us, but when they're on, then we need to be making sure that we're not just setting them free. We wouldn't just set them free. We wouldn't show them a swimming pool and say shallow end, deep end, see how you go. We would do more than that. We would train the child. We'd put them with floaties. We'd give them swimming lessons. We'd get in the pool with them. Then we'd sit on the edge. Very much like that with social media, you have to experience it. But it has to be a graduated exposure where the child is building their own skills.
Your company has a really interesting approach that kind of builds on what you've just said about teaching kids to be safe on social media. Can you tell us about the approach that you've taken and the systems that you've built?
The approach that we've taken is when children are on social media, they are on a range of applications, but they're using a core set of skills wherever they are to protect themselves, to be great digital citizens. So what we've done then is to build children's social media from that mid-primary school range upwards to the end of primary school. So it is a live and experiential social media like environment. It's kept safe within the school, so children go on within their class. They're able to use a main message board. They're able to chat privately as well. They can play games. There's all sorts of normal social media stuff on the platform. But we've overlaid artificial intelligence that analyzes and moderates every picture and every word that the child puts up. So should they swear, be racist, exclude someone, use hate speech, we can catch and moderate that. If they put an image up that shows their school logo, if they put an image up with someone else without asking for consent to post that photo, if they expose too much skin, we then direct the child towards learning content, which is usually a 90-second animation. And the child then goes off to watch why they might not swear. So they might be allowed to do it in their home, but why wouldn't you do it online? And we immerse that child in that experience. So we call those strikes. So the AI gives the child a strike and a little character called Digi Social pops up, and Digi gives them a bit of a warning and says, hey ho, you know how to behave better than that. Would you like to do some learning, or would you like to go back to the platform? On the third strike, the child has to watch the animation. They have no choice. But in addition to that, so that's very much the in-the-moment stuff the child is doing. We know that children also need to know about eye health, for example. So by 2030, myopia is predicted to be the greatest health problem that we will face across our nations. And that's because we sit looking at screens and not stretching out those eye muscles. Well, we can teach children about that, about how to stretch out and exercise the eye muscles. We can teach them the value of going outside and having some green time. We can also teach them right up at the top about clickbait, about being groomed, about being trolled, about watching inappropriate content and what that does to your brain. So obviously we have to piecemeal that onto the platform. So we call those challenges. The platform auto launches those. So it might put some clickbait up for you, Simon, and say, want to see the great white shark eat the legs off a man? Which pretty much every child in Australia, at least, would like to watch that. But that exposure to graphic content obviously changes the way the child's brain works. It increases their fear responses. So we then, if the child goes, yep, and they click the button, that's called clickbait. If it says, want a summer body that looks just like this, and there's a gorgeous teenage girl, we put them into the clickbait tutorial that might be about body image. It might be about graphic content. It might be about highly sexualized content. But all of that is written up against all of the different national curriculums and protective behaviors guidelines. So we're only working well within children's age groups. So there's just every keystroke on DigiSocial, a child is being tutored by the platform while they play with their friends to make safe and sensible choices online.
So it's a protected environment where kids can learn about social media that actually responds to their choices and educates them maybe to a better way of using social media.
Absolutely. So it's really, we call it being safe, civil and savvy online. So when children go on, they go into this very safe container. There's no permanent digital footprint. At the end of the year, we just use the data at a population level about how children have behaved, but there's no identifying data that's maintained on the platform. So they, if they're going to make a mistake, they get to make it there. That's it. It's not going into their future, and they've done this learning in an environment that supports them on every keystroke.
And how can they access it?
It's based as a school subscription. So we have schools in, at the moment, Australia, New Zealand, China, and the UK using DigiSocial. They subscribe their KeyStage 2 students to the platform. And when they get the subscription, there's a parent platform So parents get to watch video-based content on all aspects of their own and their children's cyber use. And educators get their own platform as well, where they get to see everything that's happening and they get lots of other educational options for children. So it's a subscription-based model, but within a school, so we can protect children.
How can listeners find out more about your platform?
By heading to the DigiSocial website. So it's digisocial.com, and we've gone all tricky and funky because we're living in the 21st century. So it's DIGII Social, so DigiSocial. And you can just hop on there. There's lesson plans to download and you can find out more about the platform, the offerings and how to subscribe.
And we'll drop a direct link to that in the show notes. If you're a teacher or a parent listening to this podcast and you've got concerns about your child using social media, what's the first practical step you can take today to start helping them be more safe?
Education above ignorance. You know, I think as many years as I've worked, we can put money into a problem. We can ignore a problem. We can prohibit, which never works with children or anyone. The only time we ever get systemic change and sustainable change is to educate. So I would say, open your eyes. It is a fact that worldwide in our Western countries that by the age of 12, 25% of boys are regularly accessing pornographic content. That's a fact. So that's not being hysterical. What we can do is we can prevent lasting harm by educating the child rather than trying to filter out all of that content, because that's never going to happen. There's too much money in that. But we can educate the child to make great choices about what they're doing online. So I would say for anyone concerned about what's happening, it's a ghastly thing to have to talk about some of the things that children bring into school from the online space. Educate. Open your eyes. We're living in the 21st century. This stuff harms and kills our children. So get real and start educating kids.
And finally, we ask this of all our guests. Who is the key figure that's influenced you, or what is the key book that you've read that's had the biggest impact on your approach to working with kids?
I'm probably going to point to a website that's got an awful lot of material that I really like. So it's called CASEL, which is the Collaborative for Academic, Social and Emotional Learning. And there are amazing people on there like Daniel Goleman. So reading the work of Daniel Goleman is life-changing when you're looking at putting the child's well-being at the centre of everything we do. It doesn't matter how talented they are on the sports field or in the classroom. If a child is unhappy, if a child is disconnected and doesn't belong, none of those things matter anymore. So the CASEL website has got so many resources for parents and for teachers. There's always new learning going up. And it is certainly the greatest source of my learning and my inspiration.
That's really useful. And I'm sure our listeners will follow up on that. Thanks for being on the show. You've covered lots of useful strategies and ideas. And we're super excited to have had you here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Simon.
So there are lots of ideas there that teachers and parents could start acting on straight away.
And don't forget, if you want a toolbox full of effective ideas and strategies for working with challenging behaviour in school, whether that's the behaviour of individual classes or about the needs of a particular student, our Inner Circle has got you covered.
It now contains over 30, yes, 30 deep dive resources on a range of behaviour and SEMH topics. Plus, it's got a searchable database you can use to find behaviour strategies. We call that behaviour tactics. So if you're struggling to support a pupil with sensory needs, say, all you have to do is type sensory needs into the behaviour tactics search bar and you'll get a selection of relevant videos where we talk you through strategies related to sensory needs. It feels a bit like having a behaviour specialist on call 24/7.
And the best thing, Inner Circle comes with a 7-day free trial. And just like Netflix, you can turn it on or off at any time so you stay in control. Visit beaconschoolsupport.co.uk today and click on the Inner Circle picture to find out more.
Next week, we've got an interview with Helena Kulikowska from the charity Our Time. She's going to be talking about children affected not by their own mental health issues, but by the mental health of their parents. And as a result, how many kids find themselves in the role of carer for the adult instead of the other way around. We're going to look at how to identify those students and offer them the emotional support they need to meet their full potential in school. That's a really important interview that's relevant to every school and teacher, no matter where you are, especially in the wake of COVID-19.
To make sure you hear it, open up your podcast app right now and press the subscribe button, or the follow button, as it's now called in Apple Podcasts, and your app will automatically download each and every new episode as it's released so you don't miss a thing. And as a thank you, it might be nice to serve your podcast app a tiny buttered tea cake as a thank you, served on a tiny plate with a tiny paper doily, maybe fashioned by tiny ant craftspersons you've lured in from your back garden with a sugar cube. I'm sorry, I think I just slipped into a fever dream.
So if you enjoyed this episode, remember, spread the love, share it with three friends or colleagues who you think would enjoy it too, or leave us an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts. That helps other teachers just like you to find the show. That's all we've got time for today. I hope you have a brilliant week, and we'll see you in the next episode of School Behaviour Secrets. Bye for now.
Bye.